Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their expertise, and their insights with us to help us grow. My name is Gary Lafty, your host and CEO and founder of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we take experts within the field of tech and turn them into authorities so that their conversations turn into clients and their expertise into pipeline. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about what it takes to break the seven-figure mark and then aim to do multiple seven figures, what not to do and what's not actually working that will actually hold you back, and how to use LinkedIn properly that can actually grow your business. So without further ado, let's bring on our guest. Isaac, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on our show today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself? Tell us who you are and what is it that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So happy to be here. So my name's Isaac Hicks. I am the founder and CEO of a company called Autonomy. And in a nutshell, we just apply artificial intelligence workflow automations to companies to just make things smoother, better, and faster.
Fantastic. That's short, sharp, and sweet. And I love it when you can be very succinct, when you can actually tell people exactly what you do in one sentence. Absolutely brilliant. So let's kick off with your journey, Isaac. What led you to start Autonomy and why focus on AI-driven solutions today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually got my degree in aerospace engineering about 10 years ago now. And you know, whenever I was initially in that field, I liked the concept, I liked the subject matter, but I really wasn't a good culture fit. You know, it's a lot of like government style work, stuff like that. And it just really wasn't for me. So I went into Big Four consulting. I was in business transformation for that. So what my job was to go into companies, mergers and acquisitions, and kind of manage the transition from one major system to another major system. So, you know, going from, say, you know, like a Lotus Notes to SharePoint, something like that, or Lotus Notes to PeopleSoft. So I've done a lot of work like that. And then I went off on my own as an entrepreneur about 6 years ago now. First company I started was a marketing company because I figured, you know, got to learn how to market if I'm going to be out on my own. Started out as a freelance copywriter, grew that into a company, got to a couple million in annual recurring revenue, and then COVID hit and kind of wiped me out. But what was interesting is during that, I had used my technical abilities to create kind of like these automated workflow processes. This is pre-ChatGPT, you know. I'm just really looking at API-enabled workflows. And some of my clients were much more interested in these automated workflows than they were in the marketing. And so, you know, whenever everything kind of crashed and burned there, I took a little bit of time and I figured out, you know, what is it that I'm going to do next? Where could I really provide a lot of value? I just looked back and I remembered throughout my career, especially whenever I was doing consulting, it seemed that, you know, a lot of the problems that these organizations had were just that very powerful, very high skill level people were forced to do these very menial, tedious, repetitive jobs, and they would get burnt out, they would quit, the processes weren't in order, et cetera, et cetera. So there just seemed to be an opportunity to really provide a lot of value there. And whenever I got started, I was just like, this is what I want to do. And then got into that a couple years before GPT really took off. But then once GPT really took off, it got a lot of attention onto the market, which was very exciting as well.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. And this is the key thing, isn't it? It's solving a problem that people may or may not even know they have. Looking back, and as you said, there's some very highly skilled people doing menial tasks that could easily be done with automation, and that fitting in quite well for you. So talking about success, Isaac, I mean, you've hit some figures multiple times now. You know, you've scaled to, you said before COVID hit, 2 million from there, wiped it, started again, 1.5. You're aiming for multiple seven figures now. With that success, and relatively, there'll be people listening and people watching this and go, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's exactly where I want to be. When it comes to pulling the right levers and leaving the wrong levers alone, what levers are you pulling to ensure that you're on track and you're keeping up with the success path that you've written out for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, whenever it comes to lead acquisition and especially getting somebody actually all the way through your pipeline, I would say that, you know, the most important thing that you can possibly do is just make sure that when you fulfill and you execute very well, you make that client very happy. And there's two major points where you can get the referral and the referral will actually happen. It is as soon as they sign on, I forget who it was, but there's some famous saying where the greatest source of new leads is new customers. So you really have to lean into that. And then second is immediately after go live. So if you're doing some kind of tech enabled service, something like that, where you build something and then you go live, as soon as you go live and everything's smooth and they're up and running, that is the most excited the client's ever going to be. And so right then and there, that's where you ask for referrals. That's where you get your testimonial. That's where you do all of that. And video testimonials are key. Case studies are key because nobody's going to believe you whenever you're a stranger, but they will believe other people who are talking about you, especially other previous clients. So that's a really big thing whenever you're getting started. And then as far as doing outreach to cold, what's really important about outreach to cold is that you're always looking to start the relationship first. Nobody wants to buy something cold. And especially with artificial intelligence now, everyone just gets pitched to death. Like all day, every day, I know that I get maybe 100 cold emails a day and I don't respond to any of them. But what I do respond to is if somebody reaches out to me and is like, hey, I'm just looking to have a conversation, or hey, would you like to grab a coffee? Can I buy you lunch? Can I do something like this in order to start the relationship, start the conversation? And if you can really get somebody to that meeting, get somebody in person, and you don't try to sell them on that first meeting, then you can really begin a relationship where you get to the sale. And it doesn't have to take multiple meetings. You can sell on the second, third, fourth meeting. It really doesn't have to be much, but you just have to make sure that they don't feel like they're walking into a pitch fest, because nobody likes that. And I don't like that. You don't like that.
No, no one does. You're absolutely right. I mean, we all there. I can almost see the viewers nodding their head in agreement with what you just said there. With AI, with automation, it is just becoming ridiculous, the amount of emails that we're getting. And the offers, quite frankly, are just crap. They're just, it's easier just to delete the things. But the key, I want to break down a couple of things you just said there, because number one, with AI, you've got to be very, very careful when you're doing this automation that you stand out, because with everything else that's going on, how do you tell? And most people cannot tell the difference between someone who is heartfeltly say, I've got something for you, compared to the rubbish that's coming out with AI. But like you just said that, it's the relationship first. So many of these emails are pitching right from the start, aren't they? They just come out, we're great, we're brilliant, you need this, can I just bump some time on your calendar? And you just know that if you do say yes, which you won't, but if you do say yes, it is, like you said, a sales fest, it's a pitch fest, and we haven't even built up a relationship yet. I don't even know what you do. I don't even know you're any good at it, you know? Mm-hmm. And most people are not even problem aware, let alone solution aware at that stage. So Absolutely. It does not make sense. So who makes a great client for autonomy right now?
Yeah, so, you know, really what we're looking for is we're looking for people who they've gotten past that initial, like, trying to find target market fit and everything. They have the sales in place, but what they're running into is they're overburdened, right? So, you know, there's kind of supply side constraints and there's demand side constraints, right? And every business starts out in demand side constraints. You don't have enough people who actually want what you have. But very quickly, once you nail your positioning, you nail your marketing, you really understand what you have to say to your market, who you have to approach, how that sales process goes, very quickly, you end up on a supply side constraint where you don't have the resources, you don't have the time, you don't have what's required in order to actually fulfill that demand. And so what you end up getting is a lot of people who are spending a lot of time doing a lot of things, but not all of those things are actually contributing to the work getting done and the client being satisfied. And, you know, maybe client satisfaction starts to get lower. Maybe, you know, you start working longer and longer hours. I'm working 80 hours a week and it's still not enough. What's going on, right? So whenever people get to that point, what's actually going on is if you look at the allocation of the resources in your company, if you look at the allocation of what everybody's doing, they're probably spending somewhere between 25% and 40% of their time doing tedious, repetitive nonsense that they shouldn't be doing. And, you know, that's where we come in. And it's like, hey, if we just automate all of that away, you can take your current resource pool who you've already trained, so you don't have to hire new people, you don't have to go through all of that, and you can just make them more effective and more efficient and actually get on top of that. And then that's how you really go from, like, you know, the 2 million, 3 million spot to continuing to grow, because there is a plateau there that you can get stuck in, and it's such a grind when you get stuck in that plateau. And so it's really about, you know, I would say between the 2 million and 5 million mark, give or take, is where that plateau really is. And that is where these operational inefficiencies really start to drag the company down and where we can help.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And there's that plateau is always going to be more often than not around two. Some hit it around one, most hit it around two. But as you say, once you break that two, the next stage is getting to that five. And then that takes a different set of skill sets, a different set of efforts to get it there. And I'm glad you said that, because one of the biggest bottlenecks in growth, especially in tech, is operational chaos. So a lot of tech companies talk about AI, you know, and using AI to help them be more efficient, but very few implement it in a real measurable way that actually gets them the results against it. So what sets your AI systems apart, and what insights could you give founders and leaders here that are listening and watching on how to actually use AI in the best way possible?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, if you don't remember anything else, because I'll go over a bunch of different stuff, but the fundamental thing you have to remember is you can only automate and scale what already works. If you try to automate things that don't work, you're just scaling problems, right? And I see so many people, it's like, you know, their outbound marketing is not very good. And so they're like, okay, yeah, we'll put AI behind it. We'll have AI draft a bunch of copy. It's like, okay, great. Well, now instead of cold emailing 200 people a day that don't want to hear what you have to say, you're doing it to 2,000. Great. Like, yeah, that really helped, right? So you really have to make sure that whatever it is that you're trying to automate already works, is already solid, already documented, and, you know, it's a proven reliable system, right? Now, the second thing that you have to pay attention to is whenever you're looking to automate a process, what will really get you are the edge cases, right? So, you know, as an example, we have clients that are, say, in insurance, where what we're doing is we're going through insurance claims and we're looking to flag different, you know, things that could be, you know, anomalous or otherwise seems like kind of fishy in the insurance claim, right? To, you know, kind of see if there's any fraud there. So complex claims might appear fraudulent when they're actually not, right? And there might be these, all of these little nuances, and you really have to get specific about what does and does not meet the condition that you're looking to do. And much in the same way that you would train a human being to do this work, you have to take that same level of specificity and that same level of control into the artificial intelligence system. You know, a lot of people just are trying to, yeah, let's throw a little front end on a GPT API call and call it a day. That doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Everybody can tell. If you're sending me a message that was written by ChatGPT, I can tell. And anybody who is reasonably intelligent can also tell. So like, that's not what you do, right? So it's just a very quick example. Let's say you're trying to automate your outbound marketing, right? Now, what's tempting is we have this script, we'll use this script, and then we'll set up an AI bot to receive the emails, and then we'll try to push them to the calendar from there. Great. Sounds great in theory. But that's not actually going to work, because it's all going to seem very automated and fake. So what you have to do is you have to automate the research of looking into the person and looking and seeing what they did, and then automate the process of figuring out who that person is and what they're going to respond to the most, and then draft a hyper-personalized outreach message to them. And then in that hyper-personalized outreach message, specifically mention mutual connections and stuff like that. And all of these details are required. These aren't like nice to have things. These are the bare minimum in order for it to actually work. And that is the level of sophistication you have to take into any kind of process automation, whether it's client facing or not, in order to actually get results. Like if you half-ass it, it's not going to work at all. There's no like doing it a little bit. You have to be all in about it.
Yeah. And this, I think this is the absolute key when you, like what you said there was, you know, if you're just going to throw ChatGPT together at your system, by definition, it's not going to make you stand out. By definition, it's not going to be personalized, because it's an amalgamation of everybody else that out there. So you've got to make it more personalized. And as you said, you can easily see if a message has come through and it's just regurgitated AI chat stuff that comes through. So let's talk about personalizing outbound. When we spoke before, you shared an incredibly effective LinkedIn strategy with us. Can you walk us through how that came about and the results that it's generated?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, after COVID, I moved to a couple of different cities. You know, I did the whole like kind of find yourself kind of thing, because losing a business is tough. It's a really difficult time. It's very, very painful. And I know any experienced founder who's kind of been there, done that, they know exactly what that is, to work so hard for so many years and then see it all kind of fall apart, right? And so something I began doing whenever I would move from city to city is I would start an outreach campaign on LinkedIn. And all I would do is I would just be like, hey, I'm new to the area. I'm trying to figure out how the business culture here works because I'm an entrepreneur. And I want to make sure that I'm not gonna, you know, mess it up, because it works a different places, you know, like the business culture in Washington, D.C., where I just came from, is much different than it is in St. Louis, where I am now. That's much different than it is in the West. You know, I lived in like the Salt Lake City area for a while, completely different culture, completely different way of approaching people, different things that work too. Some cultures are very person focused, where you have to go to the networking events and the networking events work. But if you go to networking events in Miami, they're kind of all garbage, let's be honest. But, you know, if you go to a networking event in, say, St. Louis, like the ones that you don't pay for are probably not going to work. But if there is a payment for entry, then you're probably going to do business there because the people there are serious. So, you know, there's all these little nuances. So I would send this out and just be like, hey, I'm just trying to figure out what happens here. Can I buy you lunch? Can we have some coffee? You know, do all that. And I'm able to set like 5 or 6 meetings a week off of that reliably, you know, off of like 20 connection requests a day, because that's the maximum LinkedIn lets you have, unless you, you know, really tweak your stuff. You can set up mass campaigns and have multiple people and all that. That's fine. But to give like a very clear framework, because, you know, this is kind of how I discovered this, is you reach out to people who are in a similar field or who are tangentially related to your target market. I never reach out to my target market directly. Very, very infrequently will I do that. And I say, hey, we have a similar target market, or we serve similar clients. I would love to like buy you lunch, understand what you do, understand how you're doing what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And most people will do that because you're approaching them as a peer. If you approach somebody as a peer and not as somebody who's on the other side of the table trying to sell them something, happy to talk. Because who doesn't want to get more information on how to make more money? Like, I mean, we're entrepreneurs. That's like the whole game, right? So, so everybody will come out and do that. You'll get a very high response rate on that. And then as you're talking to them, not only will you learn a lot about that, but you can say, hey, this is what I do. Do you have anybody who could be interested? And you can even offer referrals there during that initial conversation, because now you're on a team with these people in order to get warm introductions. Now, all of a sudden, you're getting warm introductions from trusted people directly to your target market. And you're doing this very, very quickly. And so the beauty of it is each one of these meetings, it doesn't just turn into one introduction. It could be 5, 10, 15, you know, you can really get sophisticated about it. And very quickly, you can start growing a list. You can have all of these people in your target market who know you by name, who you've met in person. And those relationships are so much easier to get transactions through than trying to just outreach to somebody cold and pitch them something.
No, that's we're still in a relationship business. And I think tend to be, even people know it, it's like common sense. It's not common practice, right? So even they know we're in a relationship business, we're not seeing enough people put the effort in to build those relationships. And when you do put that effort in, as you say, it's not just about one-on-one benefit. It could be a multiple benefit. There's an exponential benefit to it through their network, you growing through their particular network. So that's a really great method and strategy that you're using, continuing to move it on a regular basis. I take that, Isaac, yeah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like a major thing that we do at Autonomy is like, you know, we serve different clients in different situations, but, you know, a major focus point for us is also, you know, if a company such as a family office, private equity company is looking to purchase a company that is kind of in this early seven figure, like late seven figures, early eight figures range, you know, coming to them in advance of them buying and saying, hey, don't know if you've seen this arbitrage opportunity here. We have information about it. Happy to give you the information. Happy to tell you what I know about how you can leverage the tech here to make your acquisitions more profitable, right? And also notice how it's like, I'm not trying to do anything for myself at all. It's like, this is how I can help you do what you want to do. And I'm not making any asks. I'm not doing anything. I'm just all value first, right? And then, you know, you have to be willing to have a little bit of space between when you put the money in your pocket and when you have the conversation. And so long as you can be a little patient, that's all it takes. If you can just be a little bit patient, then you can walk into the conversation without it seeming like, oh, this guy's just here to try to sell me something. It's like, Now, obviously, I would like to make some money because we're in business. You want to make some money too. We're in business. Of course, yeah. We want to make some money. But let's not do that first. Let's see if there's actually a situation here where we can legitimately help each other. Can we have a legitimate mutual win-win relationship here? Because if it really can be a win-win, then that person's going to do what you need them to do because they're going to win too. And it's like, you can just focus on that. That's really the key.
Yeah, the law of reciprocity. People will respond if you actually really go out there and help them and give them value first. And, you know, that it really is missing nowadays, you know, and you look back at the times when people would go out there, give the value, but people just think, oh, a demo is value now. Let me give that for you for free. And that's a demo. That's not giving value. That's just providing your product or service for free or for a minimal amount. It's just not providing value. So that's one great way. And I'm glad you've explained that to us because I absolutely love that idea we're doing. The next idea, obviously, being a speaker coach and presenter coach, speaking is a great way. Getting yourself out there. Speaking is a fantastic way to show your authority, to give value and not sell. And so you can attract your ICP. We talked this about with you before about that. But you do something slightly different and you look at smaller gigs rather than the larger gigs. You've had some great results and can drive some great deals from the smaller gigs. Can you explain your insights into the smaller gigs versus the bigger gigs and why do you believe it outperforms those bigger stages?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about how intimate the setting is really because, you know, it's very attractive to be the person who's on stage in front of 1,000 people, 2,000 people, you know, and I've been that person. In 2022, I did Startup Showdown. It was this big competition. And then Startup Showdown Finals was in front of, you know, there was a live stream of it that went out to tens of thousands. But then in the room, there was probably like 2,000 or 3,000 people as well. And that's interesting. But the conversations you have as a result of that are primarily this, like, I don't know, they see you as an authority, but they don't see you as somebody who can help them. They see you as somebody they should listen to or somebody that they should, you know, kind of like hear out, somebody who might have something good to say, which is nice. And you need that top of funnel. And so it's definitely good to have that kind of thing. It drives credibility. But if you're trying to make the sale, what you need to do is you need to be in rooms that are like 10 people, 20 people, 50 people max, probably, right? Where everybody is really telling their stories. Everybody feels much more bought in to that situation. Because then whenever you talk about something and you're explaining something, it's not, ooh, this is a guy I should listen to. It's, oh, this is a guy that can help me, right? And you want that. You want to have that effect. This is somebody who can help me. Because then whenever you talk to them, the conversation is that, oh yeah, that was a really great thing that you said. That really resonated. It is, I see that you're doing this thing. I'm doing this thing. What can we do together? And if you do this right, they'll come to you with those kinds of proposals, right? And it's very, very, you know, I won't say it's easy because like nothing's easy, right? But, you know, it's much more straightforward to get to that point of talking about serious business activities with people in those small rooms. And the best place to find those small rooms is to join networking groups or similar groups like that that have barriers to entry. It's like, you know, if a networking group costs $2,000 a year to be in, $4,000 a year to be in, something like that, it's because the people who are in that room are serious about getting a return on that money. It's like, if I'm spending $5,000, you better believe I'm trying to get more than $5,000 in that room. And everybody else there is too, right? Yeah. And it's just completely different than going to a free networking event where half the people are there to drink and kind of parade around like they're doing something, but everybody knows they're not doing anything, you know?
They're just busy looking busy. This is the phrase exactly. I use all the time. Networking events are filled with people busy being busy or looking busy, but not really that busy.
Exactly.
And like you said, if you're paying $5,000 or whatever figure that you're paying to join these groups, you're not writing it off. You want to have a return upon that. You want to turn at least that from there. And then, like we said at the beginning of this show, we're turning conversations into clients rather than just conversation for conversation's sake. It's a case of making sure that, but I love the definition there that you just said, you know, a lot of the vanity stages are there to give you the credibility, but that it just gives you the credibility. That's it. It doesn't give you the business. You trying to close clients for them is relatively hard.
Yeah,
so talking about hard then, go on, advisor, you want to finish?
I just had one more thing to add to that. So it's like the best way to look at these kind of paid networking events, right, is like, look at it as a conference in which you get multiple touch points, right? Because conferences work very well. Trade shows work very well, right? But typically it's like you have to make an appearance in the moment. Your follow-up game has to be on point. You have to really, really take it seriously in order to milk it for all it's worth. But these paid networking events or like these paid groups, this is like a conference that you get to go to over and over and over again with the same people, with the same problems. You get to form those relationships and it develops naturally. It's so natural. I'm a really, really big proponent of these paid networking groups. I've gotten so much success out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So talking about that, I've got a last loaded question for you. I've always given my guests a loaded question. This one's very relevant to what we've literally just been discussing. So Isaac, if I handed you a microphone and 100 founders of scaling, you know, tech companies and tech consultancies, and they're all sitting there listening to you, 100 of them, they're sitting there. Yep. What's one key growth insight that you'd want to share with them?
Any money that you are spending on payroll that is going towards things that could be done in a different way is money that you are not spending on growing your business. Simple as that. How much payroll could be operating capital? How much of your payroll budget could be operating capital? Really think about it, because you know, you look at it from the top and you're like, I don't know, I have these people and I'm paying them X amount a year and there's not really any move there. I'm not saying cut your people's salary, don't do that. What I'm saying is, what are they actually doing on a day-to-day basis? And how much time are they wasting doing those things? Because if you have a senior underwriter that makes $200,000 who's spending 3 hours a day typing stuff into your administration system, you are shredding 30%, more than 30%, 37% of that money going away. It's just gone. You know, 72 grand, you're spending 72 grand for data entry. Why are you doing that? Per person. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very easy to get caught in these traps because, especially whenever you're starting to scale like that, there's so many things coming at you and so many decisions you have to make. It's very easy to overlook these things. But like, that is where the leaky bucket is. Like the leaky bucket, the resources you need to get to the next step, that's where they're at, is in those inefficient processes that you're throwing money at. Nothing's getting done.
Yeah. Brilliant insight. What a great insight to end on. So Isaac, thank you very much for your time today and sharing what you shared with us. Some really, really good thinking points there and action points that someone should take. So if people wanted to get hold of you to learn more about what you do, potentially work with you, what's the best way they can actually do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my email is isaac@getautonomy.com. That's ISSAC, two S's, one A. So a little bit of a different spelling. You can also, you know, send me a message on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. But yeah, I mean, I would love to talk to you. I would love to see if there's, you know, anywhere that we could have some mutual value.
Fantastic. I'm sure they will. I'll make sure those links are in the show notes below, Isaac, so they can just do one click and get and come straight to you. But as I said, thank you very much for your time today. It's been most enjoyable chatting to you. And thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per usual, if you've picked up anything from Isaac today, please make sure you like it. Please make sure you write it down in the comments so that other people maybe seeing what you're picking up and maybe useful to them as well. But more importantly, we grow by standing on the shoulders of giants. We grow by not stamping on the landmines that leaders before us has gone apart. So if you've got something to share, please make sure you share this episode of Isaac and many others of the leaders that we have on this podcast to help your growth and to help others. So until next time, until the next episode, keep striving, keep working hard, but more importantly, be profitable. And we'll speak to you on the next episode. Bye-bye.